A couple things here. Look at my title that I've given for our class today. And I don't want to cause any problems with anybody, but what comes to your mind when you hear the phrase wedding party? Happy, sad, pleasant, happy, fun?
Happy celebration.
All right, happy celebration.
Oxymoron.
Okay. Said our late friend John. Okay. I said I didn't want to cause any problem. Anyone else? You should think of important social occasion, a family milestone, maybe a relief. a time that's going to be memorable. You know, you're going to get your pictures taken. It's going to be set in stone here. You know, that kind of thing. So, the wedding party. Now, we should be aware that all of those things applied in Jesus' day, only maybe in a little bit different way from us. The wedding celebration was in Jesus' day, from what I can read, the single most important social event of any of the people's lives, any family's life. That this was the time when the people would get together more in a more important way than they ever would in any other setting in their world at the time, that this was an occasion that went on for a longer period of time than it would in our world. And sometimes the wedding feast would be a term that went longer or applied to more than just a meal, and it could last for, I've read, for a week or for whatever. It would be a time that where the celebration started and then it just went on and it continued. So we can't read about this without remembering that Jesus himself had been to wedding celebrations before. He had seen them. Remember his first sign occurred at Cana of Galilee at a wedding feast. So Jesus was speaking here from a knowledge of life that went on. So that background is there. What about a king's wedding party? What comes to your... This is not for the king himself, but for his son in our story here. What would that immediately make you think about?
I think it would be twice as extravagant.
All right, at least twice as extravagant. I tried to think of a illustration of this, and all I could think of is like the royals in Great Britain, and when a wedding or a baby or anything else comes along, what a huge... I don't know if you're like me, but I think it gets more attention than it deserves, you know, that kind of thing. So you can get an idea of just a point of comparison. Now, in the broader setting here in the Gospel of Matthew, it's important to realize that this goes on as the last week of the Lord's ministry in Jerusalem has begun. I think most people regard it as Monday of the last week of the Lord's life. Remember that he's been on his way to Jerusalem. He's been telling the disciples what awaits him there. The triumphal entry has occurred in chapter 21, and then Jesus has been teaching in Jerusalem, and his authority, he cleanses the temple, he curses the fig tree, his authority is challenged, and so forth. And uh, uh, I I am skipping one story here. I want you to know for the time being, because I want you to see the balance that we're going to talk about, and we'll do it next time. But in chapter 22 now, that brings us to the parable for our story today, verses 1 through 14. We'd like to read this morning, and find a candidate here to read this. Anyone really, really want to read it? Randy, do you? Okay. He was the only one just facing the front that ignored me, so I called on him. Randy, go ahead.
And Jesus answered and spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. And he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. Again, he sent out other slaves, saying, Tell those who have been invited, behold, fat and livestock are all butchered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding feast. But they paid no attention and went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his slaves and mistreated them and killed them. But the king was enraged and sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and set their city on fire. Then he said to his slaves, The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main highways, and as many as you find there, invite to the wedding feast. And those slaves went out into the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good, and the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. When the king came in to look over the dinner guests, he saw there was a man not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to him, Friend, how did you come in here without wedding clothes? And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, Bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.
Thank you, Randy. Now, the idea that we need to get at here, I think it'll help us along if we think of a couple of factors here that may explain the rest of this here. First off, what does it mean to you that the kingdom is compared to a feast? What message does that send if we realize that Jesus has purposely said the kingdom is like this king who prepares a wedding feast? What things about the privilege of being citizens of the kingdom or being included in the kingdom of the Lord, what messages should come to us from the Lord's choice of illustration here?
Nothing that you could want will be lacking.
All right. First off, what a blessing to see that nothing that you could want here, either in the meal prepared or in the dress for the meal or anything, could be lacking. It would be everything you could imagine in that way. All right. Go farther.
Just the fact that you are invited.
All right.
To that feast.
All right.
Some people, you know, normally are left out or whatever. Just
okay. All right. So you have here the idea, first off, that everything is provided. I'll keep a list so we'll know here. Then an invitation is quite a prized privilege. You would think you would be so highly honored to be invited to the king's son's wedding feast that would become a priority. You'd think you would shop for the right clothing. You would mark the date on your calendar in red. It would become the thing that you were never going to miss. It is the event of a lifetime. All right. Anything else that strikes you? All right, it's something to look forward to. This is a blessing. In fact, I want to write it that way on purpose here. This is a blessing to look forward to. The kingdom of the Lord is not a dreaded burden to have to bear. You know, some of the stories that we have read, we have mentioned something about counting the cost and realizing that there could be difficulty or there could be opposition. We've seen in the very first one of these stories with the parable of the sower that some of the seed falls on thorny ground, and there's a time of testing that comes to find out what your priorities are. We found that out. But don't forget, the kingdom of the Lord is a blessing to look forward to and not a burden to dread. I think the fact that there is a celebration aspect of this is really important. In the Old Testament, God went to great lengths to try to make sure that His people appeared before Him to rejoice. Remember the three great feasts that the people the covenant people were required to keep in a year. And then every so many years there was the Jubilee, which meant freedom and a fresh start and all that kind of thing. God is a God who values the idea of people being so glad to be His people and to be in His presence and to enjoy what He has prepared for them, that they celebrate the idea. What is there about the kingdom that you think deserves to be celebrated? And you can talk about now, or you can talk about ultimately when our inheritance is final. What things about being a part of the Lord's kingdom in your mind are cause for celebration? All right, the idea from Revelation 21 that no pain or sorrow or mourning, no death, those things that are no more, that would be, wouldn't that be a cause for celebration? That would be one. Can you think of others? All right, being able to see God, to see Him as He is, to see the Lord as He is. This is 1 John 3 in verses 1 through 3. That picture would be a wonderful thing. What about the crown of life that Paul talks about in 2 Timothy 4, which the Lord, the righteous judge, gives to those who love His appearing?
I think about the fact that we've had our sins forgiven, and we can God in prayer,
all right, this is now the right relationship with God, where we have access and where we have the clear conscience that comes from the Lord's work of cleansing, the brotherhood with other people who are celebrating as citizens of the kingdom would be a blessing. I would that I think most of us would consider worth treasuring. The idea of the Lord's approval, we'll read in some of these other stories, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord. That, so you can see that there is a long list of this, right, that is made here. Now, there are two things about this this story that then need to be thought about here. Why this is possible? What stands out to you as you read this that would make the ignoring of it such a terrible offense?
He's the king.
All right. First off, who it is? This is the king that we're talking about here. That is doing this. You are invited to the king's celebration. That would be first thing. Think about though all of the preparation that goes into this. What has to be done to get ready? Now, I'm told that their custom was you send out invitations way ahead of time. People gave their RSVP about, you know, they either committed themselves to come or said they would or gladly accepted it or not way ahead of time. And then the king, they couldn't go to Sam's and shop in the big freezers with the big things that were there. What kind of things did he have to do to have a feast? It says in our passage here. All right. Look at all the stuff here that he does. In verse 4, his oxen or and his fat calves. And some of you grew up on farms in the old days, like I did. You've seen this happen. They were the livestock was. The livestock were slaughtered. Everything was made ready, which means they've had to go to the trouble from start to finish to provide for this meal, and the work has had to be put in. It has taken time. It has taken expense. It has taken trouble to get all of this ready. And now, the party that you said you would come to is ready. All you have to do is come to the feast. You know that idea. There's one other part of this. Most of the people who write about this that I can find say down in verse 11 that the situation with the wedding garment is that the custom was in those days for, especially if it were a king, when people arrived at the wedding feast, they would be given a wedding garment to wear. You've seen this, like we think of the wedding party being the actual people who are standing up in the wedding being dressed a certain way, and you know they'll have the same colors on and all that kind of thing. The king, the ancient king, spared no wealth and no expense in this kind of thing, and they would, what I can find out, were not averse to providing even their guests with garments to wear. All right, for the wedding feast. This is going to be the best. Now, what we've said down to here kind of lays the groundwork for the lesson, I think, of this passage. First, why were the people invited?
Some kind of relationship with the king.
All right. They were invited because the king invited them. Now, you think about it, this is a lot more important than it looks at first light. What I'm getting at here is the one thing that was responsible for this opportunity to exist is simply the grace of the king. He was kind enough to issue an invitation to people because he wanted them to be there to share in the joy of his family for that day. Okay. So that's the first thing. Now, that means, and by the way, they've accepted the invitation as we've pointed out. Now, that leads us, I think, to come down to verse 5 now. And to consider the offense here the way in which these people now treat the privilege of entering into the wedding feast. They judge themselves unworthy. They show themselves to be unworthy because of the way they have treated the invitation. I'm going to call it here the offense. The offense of low priority, the offense of being inattentive to the invitation. And look with me at verse 5 now, beginning. The household servants, a particular kind of slave here, are sent out to the farms and the businesses and homes of the people who have accepted the king's invitation. First, how were the messengers treated?
They were just ignored at first.
All right, they were ignored.
Then they were treated spitefully and killed.
All right, they were treated spitefully or shamefully or cruelly. Some were killed. Verse 6 says, and the king was, how did he feel about this?
Enraged.
All right, they were enraged. Now, I want to point out that the people not only, I'm skipping an important part of this that I've just about read over here. Not only is the treatment of the messengers, but the fact that the people went off to farms, businesses, etc., which indicated what to the king?
Too busy.
All right, these people are, even though they made a commitment earlier, these people have a higher opinion of their farm work and their money than they have of the privilege of being at the wedding feast for his son that they said they would come to. So the king is offended, he's angry for both reasons. The king decides that he judges their unworthiness. And he does it, verse 7, by destroying their town and so forth, and deservedly so. Their existence depends on the king. It's in his realm and so forth. And they have treated his household in this way, so they're not worthy. Now, does the king give up then?
No.
What does he do?
He goes up to the high priest.
He invites anybody that's going to
come. All right. What he looks for is just willingness to come to the feast. So he sends out his servants again, this time to people who have not been invited. He goes out to the main roads and he has people to invite as many as they can find. So they go out to the roads, they gather both good and bad into the wedding hall until it's filled with guests. So the halls, the king wants his household filled with guests. Now, let's ask ourselves in a minute, for just a minute here, what might this represent in the way Jesus is telling this story in Jerusalem at this last week of his life, with the cross looming before him? What might this part of the story, what thoughts might this provoke as we look back on it now? Eddie?
I may be getting ahead of what you're thinking, but to me, I see God sent his son, Jesus. Jesus, in this, is the son that, at the wedding feast, and he invited the Jews. The Jews rejected him, and so he invites everyone to come and be part of his kingdom.
All right. That's where I see this story headed to. The condemnation is that the king has only, the real problem is not what the people think of the wedding feast, it's what they think of the king who invited them. They have discounted the king's love, they've discounted the king's sacrifice, they've discounted the king's invitation. The king, therefore, turns to people who want to be there. And if it involves good and bad, then he takes care of that at the end, as we have already learned in one of the other stories. But that's the idea here. So he acts, the grace which first extended the invitation now extends an invitation again to those who have not been invited before. And I think this is a preview of the gospel going to the Gentiles, or the gospel going to the nations in that way. David?
Yeah, as we were going through this, I was thinking of John chapter 1, where it says that, you know, he came to his own, and his own rejected him.
Yes.
They didn't believe him.
And to as many as did receive him, he gave the power to become children of God. Yes, that would be a great passage along this line here. Now, the one other thing that we should mention before the bell catches us here, big part of this, and why I said this gives the balance here, I think, is now the responsibility to appreciate the privilege. Now, the king looks over his full banquet hall, and what does he notice? All these people are here to a banquet that he has provided, with garments that he has provided, through an invitation that he has provided. And now when he looks over, after all of this trouble, when he looks over this full banquet hall, what does he find? All right, somebody not wearing a wedding garment. And and the key to this, in verse 12, he says, "And friend, how'd you get in here without a wedding garment?" And the man was what? Meaning, what would the rest of us have said? We'd have said, "Well, I didn't have anything to wear," wouldn't we?
It was furnished.
All right, but that's right. He doesn't have an excuse. He can't say, "I have nothing to wear," because the king provided this. Now, that would say to us then, what would be the only explanation?
Disrespect.
All right.
The king. I mean, he just doesn't care.
All right. The disrespect for the occasion that causes him to not even care. All right.
It's like he took. To get in, you would have to have accepted the clothing to put on, but he just didn't go he just didn't bother to put it on.
All right, didn't even matter enough to him for him to even be grateful enough to put it on. Now, the king offers his best, and the guests offer their worst. It doesn't match, does it? And when you think about what Jesus is teaching here, if this is saying that the Gentiles are ultimately included because of God's gracious purpose then what does this last part tell us about God's grace and our response to it?
That we must be willing to obey and do His commands that He asks us, or the things that He asks us to do.
All right, God's grace should draw from us such humble gratitude, such real gratitude that we seek to please the King, that we seek to honor Him, that we seek to give Him the priority that He ought to have in our lives. And I think that is the part of this that where the balance is hard to strike with the idea of God's gracious invitation. We either struggle with the question of whether we're good enough or deserve it, or we take it so much for granted that we think, I can do whatever I want to do. God's grace will take care of it. I don't need to pay any attention to Him. I don't need to have any priority in my life. I don't need to let His will affect my behavior. God wants me at the wedding party, and I'm going to be there. Well, this parable shows the folly of that. On the other hand, the idea that I can't go because I'm not good enough, I'm not invited, the Lord wouldn't want me, that's nonsense as well. The first part of this parable would illustrate that. God wants us to be included in the celebration of His kingdom. It's interesting that in the book of Revelation in chapter 19, the wedding feast of the Lamb is an important part of the way that book unfolds, and I wonder if it's not tied to this same little story that we've been reading about today. Remember, the King invites, His invitation requires priority, and it should be taken seriously. The privilege should be taken seriously, all right? Okay. Appreciate John's comment about what a wedding feast means.
His last comment.
Okay. Yes. Okay, His last feast. Okay, in the Lord's case here, this I want you to think about how knowing that what was about to happen to Him and what would happen to His servants that He sent out to tell people that everything is ready, come to the feast. What emotions must have filled His heart as He told this story. That's what strikes me about it. So think about it. Appreciate you guys being with us today.